Good afternoon, everyone. It's just gone 2 o'clock. Can I welcome you to the Planning Committee meeting, and can I first ask for apologies?
No apologies received.
Okay, and the order of business?
As set out on the agenda.
Okay, declarations of interest. Can I remind members, if you don't declare at the outset of the meeting, that when we come to the item, you're quite entitled to declare interest there and then. Okay. That then takes us on to the minutes of the meeting, which were held on the 20th of February, for your approval. Councillor Smale.
Could I refer councillors to page 10 of 352, where we come to the conclusion on the discussion regarding the retail unit at Sutra Main Farm. As stated, Planning Commission granted subject to normal conditions and an agreement regarding appropriate developer contributions. I know that at the end, you as Chair said section 75, and it might come to that, but I believe that the sentiment and mood of the meeting was that the proposal for an off-road bus stance was really at the heart of this issue, and I don't believe that as a group we really mind exactly what mechanism is used for this. It may be, given the scale of it, that section 75 is not appropriate. I wonder if we could somehow reflect that flexibility in the minute.
I'll bring in Ian Johnson just to cover off that then, Councillor Smale.
Thanks, Judge. Just on the accuracy of the minute, the committee clerk who was present at the meeting, Mike Broadway, has reviewed the tape, and in his opinion, the decision as minuted here accords with the spoken record on the tape. So in terms of the accuracy of the minute in reflecting the conclusion of the discussion, then I'm suggesting to you that that is a correct minute. Clearly, in terms of what Councillor Smale has suggested in relation to how there might be achievement of the objective of what the committee was saying, I'm happy maybe to pass to Peter Arnstorff to explain on the planning technicalities of that.
Yeah, Chair, it's a case in that the consequences of development or additional requirements which are required by developer contributions or conditions, sometimes it's difficult to clarify which route to go down. In terms of this case, you can secure additional bus infrastructure by way of planning condition rather than developer contribution. So if it's the committee's aspiration that was the requirement or the additional requirement from the scheme, then that can be secured by planning condition, Chair, if that's what the committee wished to do.
Councillor Smale, I think that helps to clarify the situation and answers your question. It can put in, I mean, I happen to mention section 75 because I think it's a clean way of doing it, but I'm quite happy to see it done by a condition of the planning permissions given out, given that obviously we need to have some contribution from the developer. Is that okay with you?
That's agreed.
Right, thanks very much indeed. Apart from that, are the minutes agreed? Yes. Okay, thank you very much indeed. That then brings us on to public reports. The first one is the Planning Scotland Bill, Reform of the Planning System, pages 13 to 20. Peter, are you going to report on that? Right, thanks very much.
Thank you, Chair. This is a report which updates the committee with regard to reforms to the planning system proposed through the Planning Bill. In September 2015, an independent panel was appointed by Scottish ministers to review the Scottish planning system with the objective of bringing together ideas to achieve a quicker, more accessible and efficient planning system. Scottish ministers published their response to the report in July 2016, which included a commitment to consult on the white paper outlining proposed reforms to the planning system, with the ambition of enabling a planning bill to be brought forward in 2017. At its meeting in February 2017, the Planning Committee approved a response to the White Paper on behalf of the Council. The Planning Bill was introduced to the Scottish Parliament in December 2017 and is currently subject to scrutiny. It is anticipated that the Bill will be reported back to Parliament in June 2018. The Bill sets out the principal proposed changes, However, it is important to note that the details of implementation will be set out in later secondary legislation and guidance. The main headline changes are set out in paragraph 3.1 and Appendix A of the report. These changes include communities having the opportunity to draft their own place plans, the removal of strategic plans and the introduction of regional planning partnerships, local development plans being adopted every 10 years rather than every 5 years, and the introduction of an infrastructure levy to supplement the existing developer contribution process. The recommendation is to note the contents of the report.
Thanks, Peter. Just for members' interest, I mean, this is just a report on where we are at the moment, but obviously as it goes through the stages within the Scottish Parliament, there could be changes, and obviously we'll get them reported back to the committee as and when that happens, and then there'll be a final vote on adopting the bill later on, which means then we'll have the final the finalisation of the bill, and then it goes into the second part, which, as I understand, is going to be where all the nuts and bolts of the planning system are put into place. And we're again bringing that back to committee, Peter. Yes, fine. Anyway, open up for any questions that members have at the moment. And Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just wondering how it might be envisaged how the local community plans would fit in with the local development plans, and how what space, as it were, down the line of how the national plan gets set and then down to local plans, how they filled in and how much actual opportunity there are for local communities to affect the kind of what's going on in their local area and where that will fit in with Midlothian's overall plan for the county.
Chair, I can give you some what we know to date, although some of the detail may change as it goes forward, especially into the sort of secondary legislation. But if you think the current system, you have a national planning policy, then you have a strategic development plan, and then we have the local plan, which in Midlothian sense we've adopted the Midlothian local plan in November 2017. What the changes are looking to do is effectively remove that strategic level, which is currently CESS plan. It's looking to increase the remit of the national planning policy. It retains the local planning policy, but then introduces this tier below that, which is this local place plan concept. It's my understanding that communities, if they choose to do so, can produce local place plans, which will be consumed into effectively the development plan, become part of the development plan. But those local place plans have to be compliant with the local plan. So, for example, if the council wishes to allocate a particular land uses, housing numbers in a particular community, then the community may have a say in where those houses go, but it cannot say, no, we don't want those houses. So it's got to be compliant with the council's local development plan. Like I said earlier, like the chair said, it will actually be the detail when it comes forward later on that you'll really get to understand the nuts and bolts of how that works. But it's like I say, there is a relationship between the two.
Is that okay, Councillor Hackett?
Right. Thank you, Chair. It was just to kind of add as another comment, I was interested to read Unison's been doing a series about the public sector, my trade union, my employer, so I'll declare that interest. But there was a really interesting one on the area planning, and it's often, I think anyone who's quite new to planning like myself, you could see it as a cumbersome system, you know, national policies, local plans, etc. And it's quite a lot to learn as a new councillor. And that lends you to start thinking, what is it like out there for people out there in the community? Looking at one of the later applications, it talks about a bit of a backlog here within the council. And I think for a lot of, when you look at planning and how we're able to respond as a council and as a community, it boils down to resources, and I think it fits into some of the challenges that we face in local government. And I would urge committee members, and I'm happy to circulate it, the report that Unison did about the pressure that planning departments are on right across Scotland and the impact that that has for local communities.
I think we all have an empathy for what you're saying, Councillor Hackett, because I think all of us, even if you've just been here since May, or longer will have found that when planning applications come in, communities actually get involved in asking the question, how has this happened? And you can actually go back, and we still have outstanding, if I'm not wrong, we still have outstanding areas within the 2003 local plan that haven't been developed out yet. Now, that's 15 years. Now, I defy communities to be the same 15 years on from when these decisions were taken. In fact, it's probably before that, because it's probably 2 years leading into that. So you're talking maybe 17 years worth. So I think I've got a lot of empathy for what you're saying, Councillor Hackett. How we correct that, I'm blown if I know. We went from a five-year planning permission down to 3 years, but that means only starting. It doesn't mean completing, and that's something else. I mean, I've round the back of Pennycook and beyond, as the saying goes, we have circa a thousand houses going to come our way. Since I moved in there in 1990, they were talking about that. So, you know, you're talking a long, long time. And people come and people go that don't know about that and wonder what the heck's happening. So I think still this planning bill ain't going to help it. It might do something at higher level, but it's down at local community level. I still think we've got great demands on us as local members to drive that agenda locally. So that's just me probably sounding off as I'm seeing the bulldozers at the back of me. Councillor Hardy.
Thank you, Chair. I'm sure I'm not the only councillor who's got concerns about this strategic infrastructure levy and what impact that would have to developer contributions. Because obviously this would see money perhaps taken away from the local communities for wider regional transport implications rather than directly affecting the impacted communities with their needs.
Chair, I suppose at the moment, like I said, the detail on that hasn't been clear. But what I would say is that some of the messages that are coming out is that it's not necessarily just transport infrastructure. So it could be more localised infrastructure as well. So there is a system down south, so where actually you maybe don't recover so much funds from the Section 75 process, but you get additional funding from the community infrastructure levy, which is spent on more localised community-based benefits, i.e. the community get more influence in how that money is spent. So until we know the detail, it's really difficult to say how and how much that's going to work out. I suppose it's maybe at this point just a recognition that there is an issue with the infrastructure in terms of districts, certainly like Midlothian, where you've got a scale of growth and trying to keep infrastructure up with that scale of growth. So I think it's a recognition that there needs to be something to improve that situation.
Apologise.
Thank you, Chair. Could I just suggest, in light of the size of the agenda we have today, we could maybe take this, have a private briefing about this, or a members' briefing sometime?
Absolutely. I think probably after the finish with stage one of the bill, we'll arrange to bring it back to a seminar of the planning committee just to update members, because it is going to be important, and it's better to be in at the beginning rather than later on in it. So, yes, okay. Is that agreed by members? Right, thanks for that. That then brings us on to item 5.2, which is the development plan scheme for Midlothian number 10. Peter, again, thanks.
Thank you, Chair. This report seeks approval of the development plan scheme for Midlothian, which is required to be published annually and to be submitted to the Scottish Ministers. The development plan scheme sets out the current development plan position, sets out what activities are scheduled for the coming 12 months with regard to the development plan, sets a timetable for the preparation of Midlothian Local Plan Development Plan 2, and invites interested parties to start engagement with the planning authority with a view of preparing the next local plan. The recommendation is to approve the development plan scheme for Midlothian and to publish the document, place copies in public libraries, and to submit a copy to the Scottish Ministers.
Is that okay? Thanks very much. It takes us on to 5.3, which is a supplementary guidance for special landscape areas. Again, Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This is a report seeking the committee's agreement to undertake a formal consultation on its proposed special landscape areas supplementary guidance. At its meeting of 7th of November 2017, the Council adopted the Midlothian Local Development Plan, which included a commitment to prepare supplementary guidance and planning guidance on a number of topic areas, including special landscape areas, which seek to review and replace what used to be called Midlothian's Areas of Great Landscape Value designations. Special landscape areas are local landscape designations which have protection in the planning system through policies in the Midlothian Local Development Plan. Those designations are a reflection of the quality of the natural environment and provide important counterbalance to the built environment and the scale of growth in the county. The draft guidance will be made publicly available on the Council's website for a period of no less than 28 days. The Community Councils, SEPA, the Scottish Wildlife Trust, Scottish Water, the RSPB, the Forestry Commission, SNH and other identified interested parties will be notified of the draft guidance and invited to make comment. The recommendation is that the committee approve the draft supplementary guidance for consultation and that it considers a further report on the special landscape areas supplementary guidance following the proposed consultation.
For those members that have read the hundreds of pages of papers, there are requests as you have. It's gone out for consultation, so there's an opportunity when it comes back, if there's anybody who brings anything to your attention, to feed that in to the planning officers at that time, and it will come back as endorsed. Right, thanks very much. That then takes us on to item 5.4, which is the major development applications, which is the list that we circulate to members, really so that you have an opportunity to ask any questions of the whereabouts of a particular application. So, again, if you want to say anything supplementary to that,
it's
Peter.
Just the regular report, Chair, for noting, unless there's any questions or comments.
Are there any members have any questions on here of what's been reported? As you can see, there's still quite a lot to come to us, so it's going to keep people up, writing reports. Okay, that then brings us on to appeals and local review body decisions, which is item 5.5, and I should have said that it's on page 197 to 228 for those that are using iPads. It's not there though because it couldn't be in there or something. Councillor Carson, it's on pages 197 to 228. And again, it's just a report back on the decisions of the LRB and also decisions of the reporters in the Scottish office. Councillor Mulligan.
Russell, I'm absolutely greatly concerned regarding what I see in here with the appeal that was granted on the 2nd October 2017 by the Scottish Minister's Reporters Unit for the site, which is site HS10 in Bonnerig. Where effectively some of the decisions there, I think, are going to lead to a great deal of difficulty for the residents in Bonnerig. In that decision notice, the reporter gave a specific time for the council and the developers to come to some agreement, which looks like that certainly hasn't happened. So what we've now got here is a site in Bonnerig that's been granted consent that I genuinely, and I think the local members and the local public have been very, very vocal on the fact that the school capacity in the area is not adequate to be able to take that development. And when you read through this decision notice, it actually beggars belief that the reporters actually looks like it's combined the whole school capacity in Bonnerig and say, oh, you can build that, because if you add all the schools in Bonnerig put together, you can take that. So just simply shift your catchment areas and shift your kids around to develop. So what we're looking at here is kids from Bonnerig Primary School or families from Bonnerig Primary School being told you're going to have to shift catchment area to allow this new development. Unprecedented in my time, I have to add. I think it's a shocking decision. An absolutely shocking decision that we've got here. And I find it unbelievable that if after the decision being known to us in October that we've not managed to come to some agreement, with the developer, and we've ended up with a reporter actually taking this out of their hand. I think one of the major problems that we're having, Bonnyrigg, has been school capacity for a while, where we're running spending millions of pounds to build a new Hopefield primary school, and this reporter's just quite simply came in and says, well, now you're doing that, that'll build the capacity for the school, and it's as simple as that. It's an absolutely horrendous decision here, and the knock-on effects to the local community is going to be really difficult to deal with and difficult to explain. And I'll say one thing for certain, I hope your local MSP pops along to explain this to folk, because this is exactly what's happening here. This has went along to the reporters' units. About time our MSP's got a grip of them completely. And 5.1 of the reporter goes on to talk about the Midlothian Health and Social Care Partnership and local residents have raised concerns about the availability of local health facilities in the area. He then goes on to say that that's not really his problem, or neither is it the developer's problem. It's actually the problem of the people who provide the healthcare in there. I consider it broadly it's the responsibility of the healthcare providers to ensure these services are in place to meet the demand arising from the demographic changes in the area. Quite simply dismissed. Absolutely dismissed. I think it's absolutely horrendous. Now, unless I'm reading this wrong as well, there's an additional entrance coming in through the existing housing site, which I think, and certainly in any talks that we were involved in with officers and the developer and the local residents, that everybody was quite happy for that to be taken out, that the reporters opened that back in. I think that's either Harmony or Gladstone's Gate area. Where that's been brought in. I think there needs to be here, as a result of this, certainly for the three local members, there needs to be an urgent meeting between the planners and the education department to let the three local members know what are the ramifications of this and what are the wider ramifications. And I think we need to know as to exactly if this is the kind of decision that's going to come for the reporters' unit, how are we going to deal with this? What is the financial cost of this? Effectively, the council are now left to pick up the bill to provide education here. And what's more, and I'm going to say this, quite frankly, there has been very vocal concern about this, and for it to learn about this, stuck in the back of a paper on the appeals notices, I think shocking that no elected members were even made aware that this was going to end up with the appeal as it was. But I certainly think the three local members need to be given a breast of what the ramifications are on this, so as when the local residents come to us, we can direct them in the right way.
Before I bring anybody in, I'm just going to say, well, that point about the three local members meeting with both planning and education, we'll get that sorted out and take that as an action point, and that can be minuted for the record. Ian, do you want to maybe just pick up on any of the other bits, the points that were made? Or could we...
only briefly, Chair, I mean, just in terms of the education side, you remember what a primary reason for refusal of the application was that there was insufficient capacity in the education system at this time to accommodate that development. The evidence was provided to the reporters' union and to the reporter in support of that. Obviously, there was no doubt evidence support submitted by the applicants as well, the appellants, and at the end of the day, the reporter has taken a view in favour, essentially, of what the appellants were saying. The position, of course, in terms of education position, is as set out in the Learning Estate Strategy, approved by Council in September last year, and which is being taken forward in various reports that are coming before Council since then and currently. Probably wouldn't want to say any more on that, Chair, but just to clarify on the education side, but yeah, absolutely, more than happy to brief members, local members, fully in relation to the ramifications of this decision and matters arising.
Is there anything else on 5.5? No? Okay, right, fine. That then takes us on to item 5.6, which is pre-planning consultation. Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This is a report regarding a pre-application consultation for a residential development at land south west of New Battle Community High School, Morris Road, Newton Grange. The purpose of this report is to afford members the opportunity to make comment on the proposals at this very early stage of the planning process, in line with the guidance reported to committee at its meeting in June 2017. The applicants have engaged in a public consultation exercise, which included holding two public drop-in sessions in February 2018. The report outlines a provisional planning consideration with regard to development plan and material considerations. The Midlothian Local Development Plan identifies the site as being within the built-up area of Newton Grange Mayfield, where there is a presumption in favour of appropriate development. The applicants have submitted an indicative layout plan showing 79 residential units, comprising two-storey dwelling houses and three-storey flatted blocks. However, it is worth noting that this consideration is based on the indicative information available at present. A detailed assessment of any proposal will be made if a planning application is forthcoming. The applicant could submit a planning application once the public consultation has been concluded. It is recommended that the committee notes the provisional planning position set out in the report, that any comments made by members will form part of the minute of the committee meeting, and that the expression of a provisional view does not fetter the committee in its consideration of any subsequent formal planning application.
Thank you very much indeed. Is there any members want to make any comment on this? Councillor Johnson, sorry.
Hi, in 3.4, I think it is, there's reference to the dwellings are predominantly two-storey with some three-storey flats at the front of the site, and just a wee bit along the road a few meetings ago, we had some complaints about the three-storey or the two-and-a-half-storey buildings that were going to be built. Could we provide some clarification of why it's OK to propose it just a few metres along the road?
Chair, I mean, at the moment it's early stages, but that's what's been suggested to us, that it'll be a mix of two-storey with some three-storey at the front. I guess from our point of view, it's a situation where a variation height can actually add interest to the built form. So I wouldn't necessarily go against the three-storey unless you feel it's particularly inappropriate for that location, which, if that's the committee's advice, then I'd obviously just feed that back to the applicants. I appreciate that decisions elsewhere in the district have an impact on other decisions, but in general terms, like I say, mixing two- and three-storey dwellings or two-and-a-half-storey dwellings is usually okay and adds interest, but if there's a particular problem on that site, Chair, I can feed that back to the applicants if that's what the committee wishes to do so.
It's just the slope dips down at the back, so a three-storey at the back would be equivalent to a two-storey at the front, and I thought that might be better than the way it's suggested.
So I think just to get what you're saying is, depending on the layout, will depend on when the detailed application comes out, how you'll feel about it. Yeah, but I think Peter can take that bit into consideration to the applicant in saying that perhaps you use the facility of a slope when you're looking at the development.
One other thing was that on the two different days that was presented, two different proposed plans were showed, and there was a different entrance on both on the two different days. So clarification where the entrance to the site will be.
Take that one on board as well, Peter. Yeah, thanks. Okay, we're okay with these comments and moving that on to item 5.7 on pages 233 to 246. This was the subject of a visit yesterday, although not mandatory. There was a visit up there, and really, Peter, you introduce it, and then I'll bring members that were on the visit in. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. This is an application for the erection of a dwelling house on land north of Crichton Village, which was subject to a committee site visit yesterday. The dwelling house comprises a three-pitched roof building of various heights connected together by single-storey flat roof links. The dwelling is laid out in a T-shaped plan. The dwelling is primarily single-storey in height with a one-and-a-half-storey element and is of contemporary design, finished in white render, cladding and metal roofing material. The proposed development also includes the provision of a stable block, garage, erection of a boundary wall, formation of hard standing and landscaping. The site will be accessed off the B6367. Development plan policy supports small-scale incremental housing development in the countryside by allowing small villages, hamlets and clusters of dwellings which are classed as being in the countryside to increase by one new dwelling during the plan period per five existing dwellings. On the basis that Crichton comprises 19 residential properties, there is support for an additional three residential dwellings during the local plan period. The proposed site location is considered acceptable based on its proximity to the existing dwellings and its relationship to the landscape. The proposed dwelling house is of a contemporary design, which is to be finished in contrasting materials. The use of white render, stained black timber cladding, and large amounts of glazing contributes towards the interesting and attractive appearance of the dwelling. The proposed garage and stable block are to be finished in materials that match the proposed dwelling. There have been 8 representations and consultation responses from Scottish Water, the Council's archaeological advisor, the Council's policy and road safety manager. The details of the representations and the consultations are set out in sections 5 and 6 of the report. The recommendation is to grant planning permission subject to conditions.
Okay, I open it up now for members that were on the visit. Councillor Smale.
First of all, I declare my interest as being directly and indirectly interested in 25 acres within the conservation area, mostly in Borthwick. I'm also a trustee of Crichton Kirk and a trustee of Scottish Civic Trust, which is engaged in placemaking and also supporting conservation areas. I think it was very interesting, Peter, that you did not mention the expression conservation area in your introduction to this subject, nor did the architects. We do know that Scottish Civic Trust, they won a run-up award for work at Hopetown in 2013. But first of all, can I compliment the planning team for the work they've done over the last 25 years that I've lived in this conservation area? There have been many development proposals which have mercifully not seen the light of day. And the most recent one in Borthwick, where the construction of an additional cottage was entirely in natural local materials, is extremely praiseworthy. However, here you're taking a very different tack. I think the problem we have is the interaction of these two policies. There's the 1+5 policy, which I don't have any problem with, but also the issue is that the conservation area rules and the policy guidance notes from Historic Environment Scotland continue in full force and effect. And what do they say? And the two key words, it's not to do with whether you like a building or don't like a building. It is to do with whether or not this development will preserve or enhance. Now, this house is clearly a modern house. It is clearly not in the style of Crichton. Crichton has a building history that goes back to Roman times, and every whole building that has been put up there consists of local stone or traditional stone from the escarpment, and so do the roofing materials. So all of a sudden, after 2,000 years, we have a modern house. It does not fit in to the catchment of the surrounding houses. And we'll talk a little bit about them. On the one hand, the rule is that for 5 houses in a cluster, you can have 1. But then the guidance notes say that 1 house must relate to that cluster. Clearly, this is in complete opposition. And the problem you have, and it's not my words, but our own conservation area assessment said that the cottages that they are next to, whose drying greens back onto this, are some of the most important cottages put up in the 19th century. The planning officer didn't seem to know that they were by Sir Robert Round Anderson, who was Scotland's premier architect. And we're planning a modern house just next to this. The second problem I have in terms of context is that there is no discussion at all in the papers of the fact that there is nearby an antiquarian site of national importance, and that is Play Hill, which was originally a Neolithic settlement taken over by the Romans. The official listing for this particularly draws attention to the vistas that you have from Play Hill, and these will be compromised by this modern house. There has been no analysis produced on that point. We continue in our own policies to stress that a house should fit in with its local context, including in materials. This clearly does not. In your other work in the conservation area, you quite rightly have an insistence on wood that fades with the climate. Here we have black and white. You seem to be wanting, for some reason, to have sinusoidal roof, which is referred to by some of the local residents as corrugated iron. You've not brought to the attention of the committee that there is a specific recorder decision in Plopton in the Highlands that says in areas where the roofs have been made of tiles and slates, sinusoidal roofing should not be used. So here we have an industrial-type roof. We have a house whose square footage seems to be pushing out the limits of the rules for these add-on one-on-five houses. It should be no larger than 150 metres square, but we have no information on that. What we do know is there's a rule for these one-on-five houses. They should not be two storeys. But as you yourself said yesterday on the tour, the use of a very, very large so-called dormer window actually constitutes two storeys. So that is clearly in breach of the guidance we have. There's a further matter that's not being considered. Even under the new rules, which evolved in 2008 and 2015, when you create a new house in a conservation area or in a village, you are supposed to have containment. And a number of sketch maps are available from Historic Enterprise Scotland showing what may or may not be permitted. You're welcome to have a look at these. But these clearly show that a house on the edge of a village looking out on an open escarpment is not permissible because there is a lack of containment. The architects argue that a single large tree in this plot is containment, but I might suggest that sometimes trees die and fall down. I can accept that containment could be a wood, but it can't just be a tree. And in case of the main elevation, they're actually taking away any physical barrier other than a fence so that they can maximise the view. So, for all these reasons, and I thank you for your patience, I don't think we can agree to this without breaking the law on conservation areas.
Peter, do you want to respond to that, or Robbie?
I suppose, Chair, from my point of view, I recognise the Council's view and opinion. I suppose the initial point for me is just trying to reassure the committee that it has been assessed correctly in accordance with development plan policy, legislation and guidance. We have not missed any piece of legislation, which meant that the legislation is... that we've assessed this incorrectly. The members will be aware that the archaeological consultant has responded to a consultation on the archaeological situation of the site, and I know the councillor went up to the site yesterday, which is 100 metres or so away, and I appreciate that. In terms of the overall position, I appreciate that it's a modern, contemporary design in the building, and you know, in the committee report, I could maybe refer you to some paragraphs in the paperwork here, in particular paragraph 7.13, which actually is Historic Environment Scotland's advice. And towards the bottom of that paragraph, it does make reference to the fact that when you are developing in areas, conservation areas, it doesn't mean to say you automatically have to build old-style, traditional-style buildings, and that modern contemporary design does add to the character of areas. So it's just maybe a difference of opinion. I think if you were looking at a site which was a direct infill, i.e. sandwiched between two historical buildings, I would take on board the idea that it needs to be more reflective of those design. But as you see from the site visit yesterday, there is a little bit of detachment from it. You know, we walked through a garden to get to the site, so it wasn't a butting up to another historical building. That is a judgment call from the members whether you feel that's too far away from the set of Crichton. That's a judgment call to be made. But the assessments, like I say, from the paperwork concludes that we interpret it that it's close enough to Crichton to form part of that cluster. And because of that little bit of separation, you can take an approach with the modern architecture, Chair. I think it's a difference of opinion.
Thanks, Peter. Anybody else? Right. Give us a smell.
I think you've hit your finger on the central paradox. Under the guidance, a new house can be created, one on five, but it's supposed to be part of that cluster. And if it's supposed to be part of that cluster, then it needs to get on with the cluster. So you can't have it both ways. It can't be one and plus five, and then at the same time, a remote house, as it were, in the countryside. There's another matter that worries me. When I discussed this earlier with the planning officer, looking for some precedent as to why this was okay, she said, well, don't you know that there is an exemption for houses of exceptional architectural interest? And when you discussed it with me and when I discussed it with my friends in HES, they said, yes, there is an exemption for houses of exceptional architectural interest. But that phrase does not appear anywhere in the guidance to councillors. And there is a test you can go, if you think this is the case, to Architecture and Design Scotland and have it verified. Likewise, on Play Hill, it's true that the archaeological advisor has looked at the site we're dealing with, but I've had no appraisal at all of whether or not these important vistas are going to be compromised by a very strong-looking modern house within clearly the foreground of the vistas that Play Hill enjoys. I think we need to do far more work before we can do anything here. We have, as a group, trimmed away round the periphery where we've had conservation area issues before. We've done that in Lasswade, and we've done it at North Middleton. At Sutra, some of us said, well, it's right far out at the periphery. But here we're right in the centre of the conservation area, and I think we need to be much more careful about what can be made here. The Lasswade house we looked at earlier on, as Councillor Leigh Douglas pointed out, that whole area has a multiplicity of different houses. But there was a lot more effort using a sebum roof and using natural stone. Here, the use of the sinusoidal roofing strikes me as something that was going to get us into considerable disfavour with the architectural world. I fear that if this house is built, then years to come, people will say, why did they allow that?
Thanks very much, Councillor Smith. Councillor Cassidy.
Thank you, Chair. As you say, we went on this visit yesterday, and I was absolutely gobsmacked at the design that we've seen that was presented by our planners. And I'm looking at paragraph 7.13, where it says, this approach suggests an honesty and confidence in our modern architecture, which will be valued by future generations. So I think that these people seem to have a handle on what's going on with this sort of development, and I don't think they'd just go in willy-nilly and grant their permission or their blessing for something like this. I also would like to point out, we went through the archway that was designed by Sir Robert Round Anderson, and when we got through this beautiful archway, there was two of the most hideous extensions I've ever seen in my life plonked onto the back of these buildings. So that's my opinion, but I think that this building will be actually a boon to that village. I think it will blend in the old and the new. I think it will sit nicely. So that's just my opinion. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Councillor Cassidy. Is there any in real? Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Chair. Just bearing in mind what Councillor Smale was talking about, how all the houses are built with the same stone, and this is an open question, it's probably one that anyone in the committee could answer, but it's where would you get that stone today to build arguably three houses over a five-year period? Yeah, villages do modernise, and I accept some of the points and arguably the passion to try and keep the conservation area to its character, but there is a time where if planning guidance is to allow three new houses over 5 years, it's, well, how do we as a committee look through it with modern eyes about how we have our design and architecture that accompanies the existing buildings going all the way back to arguably 2,000 years. Having seen the building myself, I wasn't able to make the site visit. I could see where it would be a building of interest. I'm just wondering what guidance is there either in the local development plan that I might not have seen or general guidance around how a village like that would grow three new houses every 5 years, and there's a policy that's applied right across the county to some of our hamlets.
Yeah, Chair, I mean, the local plan does support this incremental growth of small villages, hamlets or clusters of buildings was the phrase I used. So there is support for that, and that's recognising the fact that small settlements still maybe want to grow and expand, to have new people, to maybe enable local people to stay in a village if they wish to do so, because you can provide additional housing for it. So there is a desire and a principle that supports that incremental growth. But because it's in the countryside, it is very contained and quite restrictive in terms of numbers. You're then into a situation where it depends on the individual village or cluster. Some are in conservation areas, some are in special landscape areas, some aren't. So you're then looking at the architectural merits of proposals to see whether they are compatible with their setting and their landscape. So in this case, because of its sensitivity, you have got, I think, and recommend an attractive building rather than, shall I say, just a more square rectangle type box that many houses are, and there's a market for those. So I think in this case the applicant has demonstrated an increase in the design quality of that proposal. But when you're trying to match old buildings and new buildings, it can be a challenge. But I think all the advice, either at national level or local level, is that you can't turn your back on modern architecture. So it's about the quality of architecture, whether it's modern or traditional. It's about getting the quality right. And here we've judged that the quality is there.
Mel, I'm being lenient, so I'll let you back in again.
I don't want to hog this, but I don't think planning law and conservation areas can depend on the personal preferences of individual planning officers. And there is a referral route that you can take to Architecture and Design Scotland. Are you not in agreement that this house has to be of exceptional of architectural interest? That, I believe, is the test. And I've seen no evidence that it passes that. And in terms of materials, it certainly doesn't.
Without officers, I'm just going to say it depends. It actually depends what you like. It's in the eye of the beholder, in a sense. And anyway, I'll bring in Councillor Mulligan, because I don't want to get into the techie about whether an architect thinks this, that, or the next thing, because over the years, you could go right round the whole country and think, how the heck did an architect actually think that was nice? But let's not go there. Councillor Mulligan.
Thanks, Chair. I actually agree with the argument Peter Smale's putting up, but I'm sorry, Peter, I can't think of another word but sheer hypocrisy as to what you laid in that last maid's doorstep where an area of great landscape value, a green belt application, and slap bang a conservation area where we've built a very similar house that you voted for. I'm really sorry, it's taking my breath away here. However, did you not vote for it?
I voted with you on the matter of the green belt.
I'll withdraw that then, Peter. I couldn't see who had voted with me. My apologies, but it just was. When I heard you actually try to placate that there, I had just taken it you had voted against us. I tend to agree with you, Peter, that it doesn't fit in my view, to a conservation area. I think, as Russell says, it is in the eye of the beholder, but I've got to be quite frank when I look at it. It's just no for me. I think these areas are there to be protected properly. I do appreciate there's been a lot of work in trying to get this to fit in, and I take that on board, but I actually agree with Peter on this issue that, in my view, just simply doesn't fit in here.
I would just like to say that I think the design of the building is in sympathy and synchronicity with the rest of the buildings in the village. So although it's maybe not in the same, built in the same, the same materials, I think it's still in keeping with the village.
Right, before I bring you back in, Councillor Smale, I want to see if any other member that's not spoken wants to make a contribution, and then I'll actually try and come to getting to formal motions, stroke amendments. So is there anybody else who wants to make a contribution before? Councillor Johnson.
I wondered about the new entranceway that was going to be cut through the existing bushes or hedgerow that was there, and wondered, I know it's very quiet there, but would that have any significant traffic implications for a wee village? I did notice the other two entrances just nearby, but would that third one be a problem?
No, Chair. I mean, in terms of assessing it, we've considered that it's a single dwelling house, very low level, vehicle numbers. The design is done in a particular way that you would, because you have to remove a section of that hedge to get the entrance out onto the road. There's replanting, but having that setback so you get the visibility display in. So I was trying to explain that yesterday on the site. But in terms of the assessment, it's a single dwelling house, low-level car usage.
Paul. Councillor Winchester.
Did you forget my name? Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to say that I think the design of the house is absolutely beautiful. It can't be seen from the other five houses due to the, I don't know how many metres high the hedge was, but that time does move on and we have to change our planning, our houses, the look of houses. We can't keep going back to a couple of hundred years previous to actually design a modern house.
I'm going to formalise it. Councillor Smale, I think perhaps you're going to move against it, but I'm not sure yet, because I know you haven't been hogging the meeting.
Thank you all for your various contributions, many of which are subjective. I can tell you that predominantly those who live in Crichton do believe it will detract from their village. And the test is not whether you like it or think it's stunning or any of that. It's preserve or enhance. You've just passed at page 126 on the matter of the landscape. Description of Crichton. The estate settlement of Crichton has a strong architectural integrity. It will lose that integrity with this house for all the reasons I've mentioned. I think I have some sympathy for the owners who I think have been led on by planning to get to a much more advanced stage on this. I think this proposition has to be sent back for at least a redesign, and that we should involve, as we say, a lot of care in this. That's in our plan, and we should have external parties advising us as to whether or not the test of exceptional architectural interest has been passed. We should also test whether or not the compromising of the Playhill settlement is an issue for us, which, as I believe it must be, given the description of the place.
What you're doing is moving refusal off the application as it stands. Right. So a second to Councillor Mulligan. Right. Okay. Is anybody prepared to move the report? Councillor Cassidy, seconded by Councillor McKenzie. Hey. Alexander, sorry. It's been a long day. Right. Okay, do you want to say anything further on it? Okay. Right, I'm going to put it straight to the vote. Those in favour of the motion that was moved by Councillor Smale, please show. Those in favour of the amendment moved by Councillor Cassidy, please show. Okay, the application is passed. This brings us on to another uncontroversial one. Item 5.8, on pages 247 to 278, which is the application that was continued from the last planning committee for the erection of a drive-through restaurant at Tesco's car park, Harden Green, Dalkeith. Peter, to report.
Thank you, Chair. This is an application for the erection of a two-storey drive-through restaurant and associated alterations to an existing supermarket car park and access road. The application site is an area of the existing car park at Tesco, Harden Green, Dalkeith. The proposal comprises the erection of a two-storey drive-through restaurant with 187 seats. The upper floor will house the dining space and service facilities for customers and staff. The proposed operator is McDonald's Restaurants. The building will be predominantly two storeys in height with a single-storey element attached to the southwest elevation of the building. The building will be 12.6 metres deep and 8.5 metres high. The building will have a contemporary design with a flat roof, large areas of full-height glazing and a modern palette of finished materials. The main car parking and circulation space will be to the southeast of the building. The restaurant will have access to 33 parking spaces, of which 19 will be within the curtilage of the restaurant and 14 will be shared with Tesco. The site will be accessed via the existing S Bank roundabout and the access to Tesco. The site is located within the settlement boundary of Dalkeith, where there is a presumption in favour of appropriate development. The site is within the car park of an existing retail operator and is neighboured by a coachworks. in the absence of any restrictive development plan policies for the siting of restaurants within the built-up area, subject to their compatibility with the character and amenity area, the proposed use is acceptable in this location. The proposed development will result in the reduction of parking provision at the Tesco store. However, the remaining minimum provision of 382 spaces is sufficient to meet the demands of the store. Consideration of the application was deferred from the committee's meeting in February to enable the applicant to submit additional information and for further consideration to be given to issues relating to litter and traffic implications on the S Bank roundabout. The litter strategy is set out in the report and is also shown on the plan on page 258. Further clarification on the traffic numbers is set out in paragraphs 2.3 to 2.8. The February committee report referenced that there have been 41 representations received in relation to the application, and consultation responses are outlined in the report. One additional representation and a further consultation have been received since the committee's first consideration of the report. These are set out in the updated report. The recommendation is to grant planning permission, subject to conditions and securing developer contributions towards the Council's A7 urbanisation scheme.
Thank you very much indeed. Councillor Smale, you were the one that led the charge on it being continued. I'll allow you to...
Yeah, I very much appreciate the extension of the litter picking policy and its definition, which was missing in the previous application. I just want, on a practical level, from the point of view of the councillors in this area, to ask what mechanism will there be where we have constituent complaints regarding the condition of the Tesco area? What mechanism will there be for us to empower the residents to have input to the Tesco stroke McDonald's arrangements? And secondly, on the question of transportation, I wonder if you could take us through what additional work has been done on the traffic flows relating to this site.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, in terms of the litter, in terms of what the proposal is, you see what the operator is proposing to do. If planning permission is granted, that will be conditioned. That gives a vehicle to enforce if the council needs to do so. In terms of the communities and local residents, they can either help the planning authority enforce it by notifying us if they think there's a breach of that condition, or sometimes just a polite direct approach to the company sometimes helps. They have made a commitment here and at other stores they already have in terms of litter picking. It's most probably the only store I know that has conditions in that regard. It's most probably the only store I know that commits to this level of litter collection. So I think they are taking it very seriously, Chair. In terms of the traffic, Chair, we've not received any additional studies because of the time period. What the applicant has done is try to explain them clearer, because if you remember last time, it was a question of being clear about how many additional traffic movements there was. So you're effectively looking at approximately one additional vehicle per minute coming out onto that the S Bank roundabout using that Tesco access. So that's the basic consequence of this development.
Councillor Cassidy, then Councillor Beard.
Thank you, Chair. It was myself that asked for an air quality assessment, and I'm reading here that we don't seem to have done one. The Environmental Health Manager did not object to the application on grounds of air quality and did not propose any conditions relating to air quality. Has this guy got some kind of internal system that he uses to judge these things, or do we not have a mechanism for measuring air pollution? Because if you go on the internet, you'll see where they've been refused before McDonald's. There's quite a few have been refused for air pollution over the up and down the country. Now, I don't know, maybe we're different in Midlothian, we don't care about the air pollution, but I certainly do. So I don't know why this hasn't been addressed.
Yeah, I mean, Chair, we haven't had an air quality assessment. Like I said, the internal experts, which we've referenced there, are advising us there's no concern to that. I guess it's because the scale of development proposed is comparable to other developments throughout the district. So why this one requires an assessment or a different form of approach compared to those other developments. In terms of the overall bigger picture, in terms of air quality, I think hopefully everyone cares about air quality. In terms of the spatial plan, in terms of the adopted local plan, the point of sustainable development is trying to create a strategy which helps the environment in sort of not just the air quality, but in all across the environmental criteria. So I just think, Chair, it's really unusual to require an applicant of this scale in this location to do an air quality assessment of their application. We see applications all the time which are before us, and we make judgments based on the local development plan, and it's that plan which is strategically looking at environmental quality, Chair. But like I say, I'm in the hands of the environmental health advisors, which are the specialists in this regard.
Thank you, Chair. That's not the answer I was looking for. I was looking to find out if we do have a mechanism for air pollution in this area. It's becoming a massive problem. If you go up to Tesco's and you see the amount of traffic coming in and out there, and we're going to be... People don't go into McDonald's just to buy a carry-out and drive home and eat it. They sit outside McDonald's a lot of the times and eat the food. As you can see when you drive down to New Craig Hall, from the amount of litter spread about their car park. And I just feel that we're not taking this serious enough, this air pollution aspect. I'm also concerned that we're removing a recycling centre, which Tesco's have put in place, and we're replacing it with a drive-through food store. So I'm just not... it's not joining up for me with the dots here.
Chair, if I could just clarify on the recycling element, that's going to be relocated within the Tesco car park. Chair, so that's just going to be relocated.
Councillor Baird, then Councillor Alexander.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to reaffirm my hard neutrality on this, basing that on the combination we have in Ward 5 of nearby residents to this proposed development, and the further away constituents. Councillor Cassidy does raise a good point. The Harden Green Tesco petrol station is known to be one of the most popular in Midlothian, and whilst you turn your engine off when you're getting fuel, you've got it on while you're stuck on the roundabout waiting to get into the petrol station, which is a pretty common occurrence. So it's right to raise that with when you combine a drive-through where cars are idling along with cars idling at the petrol station, and you've also got buses trying to get through that as well, and they're idling trying to get over the roundabout, there likely be some concerns. However, though, I am pleased to see the litter collection plan came forward, because obviously that was a big point that constituents had raised to us. So I am pleased to see that. I also note that they've addressed they've noted some of the antisocial behaviour concerns that we had as well. I am happy with the progress I made. Although I still remain to be wholly convinced that it's the best for the constituents.
Although there isn't anything within the local development plan about healthy eating, and although the report says that it isn't within any of the local schools, I still think that the availability of the bus to get quickly to McDonald's from both Last Wade School and Penny and Dalkeith schools, that a lot of the children there are going to go to McDonald's rather than take the opportunity of eating healthily within the schools. And I think this is going to cause a lot of litter as well out with the litter pick area. And also people taking, eating the meals on the way back home in their cars, they tend to just throw open the windows and throw it out. So I'm quite sceptical about it.
Councillor Mulligan, then Councillor Hart.
Chair, as you'll be aware, I think I've been banging on about out-of-town eateries and the effect it's having in our town centres for some time now, and had hoped that we would have some hard and fast supplementary guidance and how we're going to control that. And when I read this paper, I can only but think we'll be accused of fiddling while Rome burns, because quite frankly, when you actually read this and you see what folk have got planned for sitting outside our towns, where when you look at the sequential test, where the owner of the site's just down the road, they're looking at two other eateries in the area. Mayside Garden Centre were in negotiations, but they think they've got somebody else going in there. I think we're in serious danger here of completely losing the war in our town centres. Dalkeith, whilst it's no by any imagination the best town centre area in Scotland, it's certainly still one of the ones that's still quite full. If you look at the effect that Tesco opening in this area had on the outlying towns, it was absolute devastation, irrespective of whether professional planners tell us it wouldn't be. Absolutely, yes, it was. I'm kind of baffled by there being nothing in the report regarding our own planning officers' comments on the sort of sequential information given to us here. Because just when I walk outside, when we talk about there's no areas in Dalkeith or Bonnerig, if you walk outside there, there's an area that was, I think it was a kitchen shop or a kitchen replacement shop there, that's quite a large shop that's lying mm-hmm. vacant next to the taxi rank there. So I just wonder how that couldn't have actually accommodated a McDonald's. When I look up in Bonnerig, you have a site for sale that was the old co-op. It's been for sale for some time. But also, just across the road, there's been a site that's changed hands on three or four occasions lately that was the old Bonnerig market site. So I'm kind of baffled as to how these sites couldn't have been considered. I actually genuinely think we're in danger here, as I say, being accused as fiddling as Rome burnt here, and unless we do something drastically and very quickly, what we're going to find is you're going to have all these eateries popping up out of town, and the areas inside our town centres that are kind of reliant on either the hot food takeaway, restaurant, pub kind of things, they're just going to disintegrate and close.
Thank you, Chair. Picking up on one of the reports that Councillor Milligan discussed earlier about the HS10 and the reporter not having any concern for access to health services, and then you look at the one representation we've had from the Health and Social Care Partnership that talks about diabetes, and that's one of the objections I've had from local residents is about the whole healthy living agenda. And it's linking that access to health services, but, you know, my question is, do we or do we not have an ability to object to a planning application based on health issues? Because the reporter says we don't around access to healthcare. Our own Health and Social Care Partnership is raising concerns about diabetes. So do we have the ability, whether it be this planning application or any other, to object to a planning application on the basis of its impact on our residents' health?
This is something we've looked at before. In fact, members who have been on the committee previous to the last elections will know that this came up in relation to a decision made in relation to a hot food takeaway close to Last Wade High School. In fact, the then chair of the planning committee wrote to the Scottish Government, and the response was, in essence, that there is guidance in relation to healthy eating. It is up to local authorities, if they want to seek to try and include policies within their development plan, but they will be somewhat limited in effect in relation to how you take forward that sort of approach vis-a-vis the market and the opportunity for people to locate within retail premises. So there is some degree of leeway in terms of what a planning authority can do, but in terms of it being the sole issue in relation to a planning application, my view would be that if it was the sole reason for trying to refuse a planning application, it would be very difficult to sustain at appeal.
Zach, I'll bring you in again.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for that clarification. One of the other things that highlighted in the report is an application next to this application with respect to two other takeaway outlets. What is our, and then looking at the traffic impact, what ability do we have today, looking at this application, to consider future impact from future development?
Chair, I think for today you've got to consider this case on its merits and how that's impacting or not impacting on its surrounding circumstances in terms of traffic, neighbours, noise, etc. I think it's very dangerous, and I don't think you can, well, you shouldn't consider what may or may not happen. I think the situation, when you get to the other applications, you potentially can reference this decision, regardless of whatever decision you make, because that's then a formal decision that's been made. But those other applications on the neighbouring piece of land are literally just been submitted. They're subject to assessment. There may be discussions if planning permission is granted. There may be a need to assess whether you're talking about over-provision, for example, or a cumulative impact on traffic. So as you move through time and as things get built or get permission, there is an accumulation of assessment going on, but it's almost like you need to assess this one based on the set of circumstances rather than anticipating or letting what might happen in another application influence it.
I just want to pick up, Councillor Hackett, on your comments regarding the health and social care representation. It's the first time in all my years that any representation has been made. And I would think, and I'm talking about sitting on planning committee, both in Edinburgh and in here, and I have never seen anything like this before. And I have to say, I was a bit uneasy about it coming in, but Peter insisted as an officer that it has to be reported because it's a matter of public record, and I accept that. So it's there for public record and nothing else. But I tell you one thing, if you do that, Councillor Morgan's hot food takeaway shops that he wants in his town centres, you could argue that they don't differ from anything else. And this, to me, looks as if there's a witch hunt, and I'll say the word, witch hunt, on a certain operator. And it, you know, because I've never seen anything like this. You've got the litter situation where you've got an agreement there that is second to none and is seen nowhere else, probably in Scotland. You've got health and social care coming in on one particular application, and I have to say, they're maybe not the best in the world in terms of what you could say is their offer, but I tell you, they have gone a huge, huge way to actually the healthy eating agenda. And I just get very, very uneasy that we're getting pulled in to actually calling out one particular retailer against all the rest that has gone on, not just in Midlothian, but throughout. So I'm sorry for that, but I just feel so uneasy about it, and I want to record it that I feel uneasy about it, because I just feel going to be very, very careful as a committee that we don't get caught up in our own, prejudices vis-a-vis planning and land use. And I just draw your minds back to, it's a land use. Is it acceptable to have a retailer in here in land use terms, yes or no? And that's what hopefully we can come to a conclusion on. I'm sorry for intervening like that, but I just wanted to get all that off my chest. Thanks for that, and that's probably not helped anybody, but anyway, not to worry. Councillor Mulligan, she's going to come back and have a pop now.
No, Russell, I agree with you on the healthy eating side. It's no next to a school or stuff like that, so I think that argument's away. And as you say, Ian says, we long lost the argument when the Scottish Reporters Unit granted consent right next to Lashwood High School for a similar operation. It seems that we've endorsed health eating, but only we've just to say that we've no idea, and that's not an argument. I've for long, Russell, as you're very much aware, argued that the type of establishment here, I welcome them to Midlothian. However, I think they should be in town centres. I think the sequential testing here should apply. I'm not 100% accepting that this is mainly a restaurant. I think it's mainly a takeaway, a drive-through. But however, I accept what's there. The reality here, though, is I actually firmly and really genuinely believe these should be associated into town centres. And if we continue what we're going to continue along the areas in the Tesco area, you'll see the complete demise. And I just look, for example, just down the road there, they've opened a new restaurant. Is it the Bonfire, where the thing... where the one making a hotel work, where there's been an investment in it. You've seen the restaurant along the road there that started off as an Indian and changed hands, it ends up as a Domino's. The other one that's now working away quite interestingly is an Italian, seems to be working, that was a Chinese, then moved to South African and it's changed over. And it's quite hard trying to make a living out of the town centres. And I think if we continue to allow out-of-town developments such as McDonald's and anything else, it is going to impact adversely, massively on our town centres, and I'll be moving that it's rejected on that basis.
Do you want to just move it now then, and we'll formalise it then, right? Okay, is there a seconder for Councillor Mulligan? Councillor Russell.
Thank you, Chair. Happy to second on the very lines that he's just explained about what happens to town centres. Dalkeith itself has obviously suffered greatly when Tesco's moved out. And I've no averse to any type of restaurants coming into our area. But I think we really need to protect our town centres as much as we can.
Okay, right, thanks. Anybody prepared to start again? Is anybody prepared to move the report? Councillor Hackett. And I'll take you as a second, Councillor Hardy.
Thank you, Chair. I'm moving the report on the basis that I can't see a reason under the planning guidance to oppose this application. I agree with the comments from Councillor Milligan and Councillor Russell. As a parent, I have concerns. That's my local supermarket, and I know every time I use that supermarket, I'm going to get bugged by the kids to have McDonald's. And I find it hugely frustrating that as a planning committee, we don't have the power to consider these other impacts that it has. Yes, it might not be next to a school, but I would argue there are more parents with their kids visiting that place on a daily basis than arguably, you know, individual schools that are around the county. I do commend McDonald's for their upping the litter picking agreement. What I would urge is, in talking to some residents in the local community council, that there's some joined up thinking with Tesco's. And I appreciate I'm not allowed to look into the future under planning, but you know, if we do see other developments like this, it would be good to have a plan that covers that whole site with a contribution from the private sector, from the companies that are generating that waste. Again, with litter, the difficulty is, you know, McDonald's or any other restaurant doesn't in itself distribute waste around the county. They contain it to their own site. The difficulty is, for me, I live not far from this area, I've seen McDonald's wrappers numerous occasions on my housing estate. I haven't seen Franco's fish and chips. I haven't seen, there's a wee burger van around the corner. I don't see there. Well, it's McDonald's, and possibly because it's distinctive, but it's the nature of that sort of business. And I can understand residents' concerns about having a restaurant like this nearby, but I refer to my first comment. I can't see, you know, if we objected to this, I could just see the applicant winning this at appeal, and we might lose that kind of good nature, as it were, with respect to the litter picking and other issues.
Thank you. I'm seconding on the grounds that at Streatham we see a similar setup with roundabouts with a similar distance to the Edinburgh bypass, similar distance from local communities. However, we also see a greater abundance of shops, so a greater abundance of traffic. And I've not seen any impact of the drive-through restaurants have had in delaying people's transit or indeed increasing the traffic flows. And I think any arguments to the contrary are frankly spurious. And I think in terms of regenerating our town centres, I think putting money in the pockets of the youth that go into these town centres is a far better way of regenerating them than refusing jobs for these youngsters on the grounds that they're not putting a business into the town centre because it wouldn't be viable in that town centre. Thank you.
Anybody else wants to make a contribution? Right, can I then go straight to the vote? It's the motion moved by Councillor Mulligan is to refuse the application. Can I have those showing, please?
Five.
Right. The motion is to grant the application moved by Councillor Hackett.
Nine.
The motion to approve is passed by 9 votes to 5. All right. That then takes us on to item 5.9, which is on page 279 to 304, and we're going to get a simplified explanation from Peter regarding section 42 applications.
Thank you, Chair. This is a section 42 application to amend a planning condition imposed on a grant of outline planning permission for residential, industrial and commercial floor space, community facilities including new primary schools, associated landscaping with the provision for sports and recreation and new transport facilities at land bounded by the A720 Old Dalkeith Road and the Wisp Miller Hill, also known as Shawfair. A master plan setting out the development strategy for Shawfair was approved as part of the outline application and as supplementary guidance. The current application, made under Section 42 of the Planning Act, is to change the process by which the Shawfair Master Plan can be amended. The applicant is seeking a means in which the Master Plan can be amended by a matters specified in condition application rather than a planning application, the consequence of which is to enable changes to be made to the Master Plan without going through the 12-week public consultation process every time a change, regardless of the scale, is desired or required as part of the development's evolution over the next 15 to 20 years. The proposed amendments does not seek to change the requirement that the development accords with the Master Plan or a subsequent amended version approved by the Council. Matters specified in conditions applications require assessment by the planning authority and include neighbour notification and consultation processes and do not preclude the Council from wider community engagement if it wishes to do so. A Section 42 application is in itself a planning application, a particular kind of planning application for development without complying with a condition previously imposed on an earlier grant of planning permission. A grant of planning permission under Section 42 requires an entirely new planning permission, which will supersede the original permission if implemented. In this case, this application would effectively be a new planning permission in principle. The site is allocated as a new settlement, which includes housing, economic development uses, retail and commercial uses associated with a town centre, community facilities, sports facilities and transport infrastructure located within the built-up area of Shawfair and Dander Hall, where there is a presumption in favour of appropriate development. The principle of a mixed-use development on this site was first established by its allocation as a new settlement and extension to Dander Hall within the now superseded 2003 Shawfair Local Plan. The now superseded 2008 Midlothian Local Plan continued the commitment to the development, and again the adopted Midlothian Local Development Plan continues the commitment to the mixed-use development and confirms 3,990 residential units and 30 hectares of economic land. The detailed layouts and design of the development will be subject to matters specified in conditions applications. As the Section 42 application will be effectively a new planning permission for Shawfair, a new legal agreement will be required, ensuring those commitments already agreed and secured by the original grant of planning permission are protected. There has been one representation received in relation to the application, and no consultations required. The recommendation is to grant planning permission subject to developer contributions and conditions.
Thanks very much. We open up for questions, comments. Councillor Curran.
Thanks, Chair. Peter, just a couple of questions. I notice it's not on the report, but it's on the planning application on the Council's public website. There is one letter of objection. Could you possibly read comment on some of the concerns that are in that? I'll just pass it around. I've got some copies. Just as I do that, can you clarify, there's nothing in this application that would constrain any future planning committee?
No, that's correct, Chair. This application is about changing a process, but it does not stop the normal assessment in terms of neighbour notification, consultation and assessment by the Council depending on the application, the committee can ask for it to be determined by the committee rather than under delegated powers. So it does not stop or change that arrangement. You've got a situation where the development strategy at Shawfair is set in a master plan, but the applicants effectively are trying to change and adjust that master plan on occasion, sometimes for very small technical reasons, but because it's a major application, they have to go through a pre-application consultation process. And they're just saying, look, over the next 15, 20 years, as this site gets built out, this master plan's a guide and it will evolve. The idea of having to keep doing these 12-week consultations is just inefficient and not very productive. So they're saying, look, can we just change the process? It still gives the council the final decision, but it just takes away that engagement.
Yeah, that's fine. Can we just go through the letter of objection just so we get clarification on that? I think there's probably spare copies, if you bear with me.
I don't have a copy, Chair, but if I recall...
I think, Chair, on the face of it, it seems a fairly simple change to the wording for the master plan, but I think given the depth that the report goes into, it asserts otherwise, and I'm just really seeking clarification.
Chair, I think the reason the report's in such depth is because it's actually the scale of development. You know, if you were talking about amending a condition on a very small local development, we may be not having this conversation, but it's because it's such a big development that sits behind this, so that's why it's so important. It's important to set that out in the report, but effectively it is looking to change a process and a procedure. Obviously, the letter of objection is anxious about that, and it's picked up on the issues that I've tried to discuss and answer there insofar as the procedures and whether there's still that level of scrutiny. And like I say, any changes to the master plan still needs to be done by a formal application. It's just a matter of specified condition action. So you still get that scrutiny and assessment, and members can have whatever input they wish to do so in that process. So that doesn't change that. I understand the anxiety because it's an unusual thing to do. Section 42 is quite an unusual type of plan application. Strange enough, for years you never came across any, but recently we've had quite a few. We've had a few recently. It's maybe something that's cropped up. But the objection almost reinforces or is concerned about the issues that I've tried to address there in terms of the process and whether there's still that level of scrutiny and assessment to it.
Just finally, thanks for that, Peter. And just the third paragraph or fourth paragraph from the end, and just to reinforce the point that the objector says that attempts to remove significant planning control from Midlothian Council. Just clarification on that. Is that not the case?
Yes, Chair, that is not the case.
Sorry, has anybody else got any questions? Councillor Hackett?
I've got couple, so I'll start with the first one. What in practice does this actually mean in layman's terms? I'm sorry, it's, you know, I appreciate it's a big design, and I can see I've got this huge piece of work, and I thought I was going to do X, Y, and Z, and I'm a year or two down the road, and actually, I'm not going to put the tree there, I'm going to put it over there, I'll make my wall look a bit different. So I can understand wanting to give a developer that sort of level of scrutiny, flexibility. But what it will affect day to day, and what is the risk? What is the ultimate risk? Would it mean, well, I said I was going to build 100 houses here, actually what I'm going to do is only build 80 and I don't need to consult with the public anymore about my change of view?
Yeah, I mean, one of the potential consequences could be, for example, the master plan sets out particular development parcels or pockets within a framework. And what could happen at the moment, pocket A could be, should we say, 100 houses, and to use your example, pocket B could be 80 houses. They may want to swap that around, so pocket A now becomes 80 and pocket B becomes 100. And what they want is the flexibility to update and amend that master plan so they've got that manoeuvrability. So as things evolve, house builders come on board, developments take place, that they can amend and adjust that overall framework without going through a 12-week public consultation process. However, it still needs assessment by the council. So even if they want to change those housing numbers, as I described, they've still got to formally apply, make an application, subject to neighbour notification consultation, and other engagement if the council wishes to do so. I suppose the issue is there's a big difference maybe between wanting to move 5 or 10 houses from plot A to plot B compared to maybe moving 100 houses from plot A to plot B. So what they're just trying to say is that they just need the flexibility and freedom to do that subject to the council's agreement. But it's because, you're right, if you look at the master plan now for Shawfair, it's quite a sizable document. It sets out the development pockets, the heights of buildings, the density of development, where the shops go, the town centres, etc., etc. It's into that level of detail. It sets out where the landscaping is, where the school is, and all the rest of it. So it's just taking wanting a bit of freedom to manoeuvre some of those pieces of the puzzle around if they need to do so. But again, it's still subject to the council's assessment, judgment, and determination.
Yes, it does, Chair, but again, I'm just looking for possibly examples where this type of permission's been granted and there hasn't been any problem and the community have benefited overall, and maybe if you know of any other examples where it's, to want of a better expression, been abused by developers and it hasn't been very successful.
I can't think of a case where it's been abused. It's interesting, as I made comment earlier, for years we didn't have a Section 42 application. All of a sudden we've had a couple, and it's maybe in the past applicants would submit an amended plan application rather than amend something through a Section 42 application. We just get a wholesale amended plan and application, and so that's what's maybe changed. I'm sitting here and I'm advising the council there isn't a risk, because I genuinely know that the council still has to assess and make judgments on any changes that come forward to the master plan. But it could be the alignment of a road may move from point A to point B. It may be moved 10 metres, 50 metres. A playing field may be moved from one part of the site to another part of the site. And it's just, at the moment, the master plan is quite specific about where all these components go. And it's just, as development takes place, it naturally evolves over a period of time, and it's just making sure that they have that flexibility and freedom to apply for those changes as they go forward. If there's any significant changes, Chair, it will come back anyway.
Thank you, Chair. I guess my concern is it's almost that the planner's outsourcing its responsibility to consult with the community back to us as councillors and the planning department. I don't know where all these playing fields are going to be in Shawfair, because I've left that to kind of local members, and I'm sure they're connected and engaged with what the local community wants. But it's really the community that should have that say and be involved in those decisions. That's my sort of concern there. And, I can understand. I trust your department's professionalism to kind of keep atop of all of these things, but it's making sure our community still has an input into what's going on in their local area.
Chair, it's a fair point. What I would say is that an application that comes in to amend the master plan is subject to the requirements to neighbour notify and consult. Slightly unusual in Shawfair because there's not many neighbours at the moment because it's still a sort of development site, but those neighbours are there to get notified. But we also consult community councils, etc., so there is a consultation process. And if it helps the committee because of the scale of the development, Chair, I'm happy to regularly bring back updates on where Shawfair is in terms of its master plan or progress on the development, whatever the committee requires for that level of comfort.
Mr. Smail.
I think we could perhaps bring this quickly to a close if you could assure us that on the basis of this letter there is no risk that there will be legal action against the council for agreeing the Section 42. Second thought is, I can't quite work out, it's very opaque, what is the landowner really concerned about? Because I can't see that a more flexible planning regime will necessarily harm him. What's his motivation?
No, Chair, I think the developer is after a more flexible. He wants a more flexible regime where he can amend and adjust the master plan by an assessment process by the council rather than having a 12-week delay in front of it. So he's after that flexibility, still with the council's checks and balance in play. But, yeah, I can reassure you, Chair, this is a proper, correct plan application submitted, and it's properly been correct and assessed, and the decision's legal, binding, etc. There's no compromise to the council's integrity or position.
Mr. Curran.
Thanks, Chair. Just for me to finish, I sought clarification, reassurance from Peter, and I'm happy with that. But just to pick up on one point, there are lots of neighbours in Shawfair. They stay in Danderhall, Newton Village, Hulltown, Mullerhill, Colcote. So Shawfair's the old south-east wedge, and I think we've had this discussion before, but there's lots of people that stay there.
Johnson.
Hi. I just wonder, is this just to make sure that the master plan is not rigid, and as the town or the new settlement or village, whatever it's to be called, grows organically, we still are able to make provision for what's needed and we aspire to as time goes on?
Yeah, there's an element of that, Chair. Yeah, you know, when you set out, and if you think the Shawfair project goes back to before 2002, if you think the local plan was adopted in 2003, you know, you jump forward to 2018. Over that period of time and the next 20 years, developments change and evolve. They do, and it's just being mindful of that. The master plan had all the best intentions from the start, but it was very comprehensive, very detailed, which is very good, very useful, but it's also very rigid. So it's just trying to build in a bit of flexibility to keep the thing moving. As the local members will know, there's been, you know, the business parks started, the railway station's gone in, some of the housing developments have started building, so there is movement now. So it's just having that, keeping that momentum to keep the thing going.
Thank you very much. When I was a student in the 1990s doing town planning, I did a big project on this, and very similar to what's been agreed today.
Hey, thanks for that, Councillor Johnson. In actual fact, it's when in the shadow year of 1995, the South East Wedge, as it used to be called, was actually being avidly discussed, because at that time Lothian Region had got the opportunity to go in there and buy the land, and under disaggregation, Edinburgh got part of the land and Midlothian got part of it. And as you recall, at a council meeting a number of years ago, we agreed to sell it off. So we are where we are. I'm going to suggest that we agree this in front of us today. And what I'm going to suggest, though, is that we actually have a presentation about the South East Wedge, because it's good to bring us up to speed. Nothing has happened there for many years, and then all of a sudden now there's activity, and it would be quite good if we could get that update so that people do know and understand when we go to discuss individual applications, which will come to the committee, then at least we've got a handle on what's all going on around about us. So I'll suggest that we do that to move us forward. So is the report agreed?
Yes.
Right, thanks very much indeed. Right, that then brings us on to item 5.10, which is on pages 305 to 338, which is the application for planning permission at Corby Craig Terrace, Bilston. Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This is an application for the erection of 191 dwellings and associated works at land to the west of Corby Craig Terrace, Bilston. The proposed development includes detached, semi-detached and terraced houses and blocks of flats. The flatted blocks are 3 storeys high. The townhouses are 2.5 storeys. The remaining units are 2 storeys. They are a mix of 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5-bed properties. There is 143 private dwellings and 48 affordable dwellings. The proposed development also includes the provision of open space, a sustainable urban drainage system, roads, cycle paths, footpaths, and landscaping. The site will be accessed off Seafield Road. The site is part of allocated housing site HS16 within the settlement boundary of Bilston, where there is a presumption in favour of housing development. Site HS16 as a whole is allocated for an indicative 350 residential units. The applicants have submitted a master plan with the application showing how this application fits into a wider strategy for the site. The site is well laid out with a variety of character areas, a mix of house types, variations in heights and materials, and open space positioned centrally. There have been 11 representations received objecting to the application and consultation responses from SEPA, Transport Scotland, the Coal Authority, the Damhead and District Community Council, the Council's Archaeological Advisor, the Council's Land Resource Manager, the Council's Housing Strategy and Performance Manager, the Council's Policy and Road Manager, the Council's Head of Education, and the Council's Environmental Health Manager. The details of the consultations and representations are set out in Section 5 and 6 of the report, and the recommendation is to grant planning permission subject to conditions and the prior signing of a legal agreement within 6 months to secure developer contributions.
Thanks very much, Peter. Open up for questions, comments. Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just reading some of the objections to the application from the local community council. And it's a comment I'd have more generally about the lack of awareness out there in our communities about the scale of development that's going to be going on. And I'm just wondering, looking at some of the, you know, loss of prime agricultural land, referring to other houses that are going to be built in the area, effect on transport. And I'm just wondering what we can do to reflect on these types of objections, not just in this application, but others, and learn from that about how we communicate with community councils and others when we look at the next local development plan. And what, if I could ask the officers, what were the steps in engaging local community councils in the previous local development plan? I remember coming here as a community councillor to kind of have a discussion and a consultation, but what's the follow-up there in making these communities aware that this is the type of development that's coming ahead?
I'll respond first, and then I'll bring Ian over and above that. I think Midlothian Council, I know that Midlothian Council did a heck of a lot. He actually had a number of meetings with community councils throughout Midlothian. It also took the caravan out there, and it had a number of local drop-in points throughout Midlothian again. And in actual fact, a number of other authorities were actually quite amazed that we had gone to that detail. I'm not saying it's perfect, and I don't think any of us would rest on laurels and saying that any system's perfect, but I think we went a long way to engage with communities. But as I said before, the difficulty is sometimes that once that engagement's done, and it's not just for community councils, but for members of the public as well, or members of the community, and decisions are taken, then others come, when an application comes in, others waking up and say, oh, gee whiz, I didn't know this was going on. And it's only by that continuing to try and educate that we can take it forward. I don't actually have a magic bullet for how to answer you, John, or Councillor Haggett, should I say. But that's, and I think the Council has done very well over the last two local plans and indeed the strategic development plan, where we're the only council to go out of the six councils in the strategic development plan authority area to actually go out and meet with the public on it. But I'll bring Ian in because he's better than I am at what was actually going on the surface.
I probably can't add a lot more to what you said, Chair, in relation to an extensive campaign of trying to get out to communities, to community councils, to communities themselves. I think that in preparing development plans, the development plan scheme you looked at also has to be accompanied by a communications plan. And in fact, when the plan is submitted through to Scottish ministers, there's a communications plan that goes with it, and that has to meet particular criteria. We aim to not just meet those, but exceed them. I think one of the biggest issues, and you probably find this inevitably with communities, is the more strategic the plan, the more difficult the engagement is. And what you get to is a situation which I've had to discuss with a number of community councils, most recently Roslyn and Bilston. I had correspondence with them recently, where you have the housing market needs, or the housing needs and demand assessment done at strategic level. You then have the identification of the housing component to be met, or the housing requirement to be met in the district council, in the housing market areas, which is on a district council basis. That's the strategic. So once that strategic plan is approved, you then have that figure which the local development plan has to meet, albeit the local development plan consultation can be at least more relevant to individuals because they can relate to them because it's sites rather than numbers. But at the end of the day, you then get the planning applications coming through, and that's when you get the sort of level of objection, because people can see it's a planning application, they can see plans. Literally, it's just next to me in the field next door, or just the field opposite. But so one of the difficulties we forget is, just slightly adding to this moment, Chair, because it's an issue which is coming up regularly, what we're getting is a housing requirement figure from the strategic level on which it is very difficult to engage with communities directly. Mm. But that housing figure is eventually being translated at local development plan into sites, the size of which and the number of which are effectively governed by the fact there's a requirement coming from the strategic level. And then the product of that is developers coming forward with applications quite correctly onto land which is allocated for development. So the principle's established. But inevitably what happens is, for many people, they say, well, I didn't realise that this was what was going to happen, and look at the impact on our communities and on services. That's the issue. Maybe I've expanded a bit in the answer, but it was an opportunity just to cover that, because it is something which is filling my email bag quite often from communities these days.
I'll abuse the chair and say that Damhead Community Council are the statutory consultee. Roslyn Bilston Community Council, and maybe the clue's in the name, Bilston, are actually not the statutory consultee. So when all this new housing, right next to another part of Bilston that's just been developed out, i.e. the Corby Craig development, they can't quite understand that. Now, people don't actually go by boundaries, and that's something else we may have to look at in the future, about are the community council boundaries actually, do they match up to what we see? Because it's a statutory consultee, the planning department can only write to the community council that's part of that community council boundary. So again, it's something, and I just want to say something, and please don't take this as a political jibe. But it's got to be said anyway, the mailboxes of all of us are now getting fuller and fuller and fuller about all we're getting is houses, houses and houses, and where the heck is the infrastructure? And I really do think, and I've said it before in this council chamber, I really do think that there's a disjoint. Ian's reporting back as a professional officer saying, we have to take the number of houses that cascade down from a national level to a regional level to a local level. The problem is that we're taking all that and the infrastructure can't cope with that. Now, if everybody walked and everybody cycled and everybody got the bus, then hey-ho, we wouldn't have a congestion problem. But I live in 2018, as do you, and you know fine well that's lovely words to say, but the reality is that isn't what's happening in practice. And we're unable to do it as a local authority. The developers, with the greatest respect, who we want to take 75 contributions from, can only do so much. There is a bigger need for us to have that kind of infrastructure. And I just say that, I'm not trying to make a political point, it's a real point which I think is agonising all of us, because we don't have an answer to it. And then, if everybody wants to get a bus, fine, we don't have a problem. Reality is, one, you can't get a bus everywhere, and secondly, people won't go on a bus, so, I accept that. Sorry.
Just to agree with the point you made about the community council boundaries and the consultation process, up in the Gorebridge area, we had some development round about Gorebridge, two particular sites, the Arveston one and the Redhook one, which isn't anywhere near coming to fruition yet. But nevertheless, the two community councils did discuss it with one another, because, and it's the same sort of situation. You've got a predominantly urban community council area, and the other community councils is very much a rural one, and they saw it as, both saw it, that the interest for these sites would be best served by the urban environment, if you like. But it's quite a process, though, to go through, which takes a lot of time. So that's one thing that needs to be borne in mind. But the quicker it's done, the better, because then the discussions around what happens in these areas can be dealt with by the most appropriate community council.
Thanks for that. Councillor Winchester.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to assure everyone that Roslyn and Bilston Community Council and Damhead and District Community Council do talk to one another, and they have started going to each other's meetings as well, so they're aware of the problem of the Corby Craig area being coming under Damhead, and they've got moves that they want to make to include in Bilston.
On this, back to the application. Are we agreeing? It's in the local plan. Are we agreeing the application that's in front of us? Agreed? Right, thanks very much indeed. That brings us on to item 5.11, which is the screened fencing at the tennis club, 5 Cemetery Road, Dalkeith. Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This is an application for the erection of netting on existing chain link fences, the repainting of a corrugated steel fence, the erection of a timber storage shed, the erection of a timber and lean-to store, and the installation of a gate at Dalkeith Tennis Club, 5 Cemetery Road, Dalkeith. There are 6 elements to the proposal, which are the erection of netting on the existing chain link fence along the northern boundary and western boundary of the site. This element of the proposal is retrospective. The netting is 2 metres tall and is attached via cable ties to the chain link fence. This dark green netting will replace existing fencing, netting. Sorry. 2, the erection of netting to be attached to the existing corrugated steel fence along the northern boundary and to the chain link fencing where present along the western, eastern and southern boundaries of the courts. The netting will replace the existing netting and will be to a height of 1.8 metres. 3, the existing corrugated steel fence will be repainted in dark green. 4, a timber storage shed measuring 2 metres wide, 1 metre deep and 1.65 metres tall will be erected in the southwestern corner of the site. The shed will be adjacent to an existing shed of similar size. A timber lean-to will be erected against the timber fence at the east of the site. The lean-to will be 3 metres wide, 1.5 metres deep and 2 metres tall. And 6, a new pedestrian gate will be installed at the entrance on Cemetery Road. The gate will be 1.2 metres wide and 2 metres high and will be finished with dark green coloured galvanised steel. The proposed developments are at an established sports club within the built-up area and a conservation area where there is a presumption in favour of appropriate development. The majority of the works are not visible from a public vantage point and are connected to the improvement and maintenance of the tennis club's facilities. There has been one representation objecting to the application, the details of which are set out in section 6 of the report. The proposed development accords with the development plan, and as such, the recommendation is to grant planning permission subject to conditions.
Okay, thanks, Peter. Councillor Russell, you called it in, so I'll allow you first shot.
Thank you, Chair. When this came before us to advise us that what the decision was and that it was up to a local member to call it in, when I read through it, I wasn't too sure, to be honest, what it was referring to. Vaguely know the tennis club. So on the back of that, I thought it appropriate to actually go and see for myself. So I approached the objector. He kindly let me into his garden. And I did see the difference between the dark green and the light green. And you may not think that it had a huge effect, but when you actually see them together like that, it does, because the dark green isn't just dark green. It's actually the weave of the netting that makes the big difference as opposed to the sunlight, what sunlight we do get in this country, the sunlight coming through. And that was one of the reasons I thought to call it in, to make members aware that it's not just a simple type of colour of fencing. It's the difference in how the effect it has on the various sites. So I do recognise that I have declared an interest here because I have approached the objector myself and saw the premises, but obviously I didn't declare at that time any particular preference, having time to think about it. And I know on the scale of the things that we've been discussing here today, it's obviously very small in line, but it does make a big difference to people that live in that area. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Councillor Ross. Councillor Hackett.
Sorry, Chair, I should have declared an interest earlier. I know both the objectors. I'm in community organisations with them, but I'm confident that I have the ability to have an impartial view on this application.
Yes, because
you're not needing to declare
the objectors are active in the community council. Of course, I've met them, and Kenneth has as well. I think it boils down simply to this. This very dark green netting is quite intrusive in a conservation area, and consistent with my previous passion for the conservation areas, I think if we were to insist that the pale green netting is used here, which is semi-translucent, it would be a lot less intrusive than the dark green netting, which I don't think is necessary for the playing of tennis.
Thank you, Chair. I know everyone appreciates the sound of my voice. I'm just wondering, reading the, you know, the recommendation is that planning be approved, subject to the following conditions. Its consent is hereby granted for the attachment of a single layer, windbreak, etc., etc., etc. What is, if we accepted that, what is to prevent, let's say, a thick black netting being put up? Or, you know, where is the protection, as it were, for the neighbour for the sunlight coming through? And that's my first question. Secondly, I'm wondering if there's a another way around this, where some sort of netting could be put up and removed when they're actually playing tennis, because if you look at the impact on the neighbours, which is arguably 365 days of the year, whereas I can't imagine tennis being played at that level, you know, even if it was a few hours a day, it's the kind of the impact on the neighbour versus the purpose of the function of the netting and the positive effect that has on the club. So it's trying to get that balance with getting what the club needs versus keeping the neighbours happy.
Chair, two things. The interesting enough, I don't know whether anyone's familiar with cricket and the idea that you could have mobile cricket screens, which are quite common in certainly in cricket grounds south of the border, big structures you move around to block light screening. They don't actually need planning permission because they're mobile structures. You can move them around. They can be quite high, higher than the fence indeed. They won't need planning permission. So that was another option that could happen without the control of the council. So there are alternatives. In terms of this application, though, it's worth just clarifying, Chair, maybe, that in assessing a planning application, officers do consider the sort of potential impact that the erection of buildings and other structures, in this case a fence, has on the amenity of neighbouring residential properties in terms of loss of light, daylight, overshadowing. So we do assess that. And, you know, it's not just a professional assessment as well. You are considering what's called good practice. There is documents telling us how to assess the impact on light and daylight and how you work out overshadowing. And there's a series of calculations you can do which looks at the separation distances, the angles and all the rest of it. So we've been through that process here. And the conclusion of that is that the proximity of the fence, the height of it, and its relationship to the neighbouring property, which is situated in the woodland, it does not have a detrimental impact in terms of sunlight or daylight. It doesn't. It meets the tests. It's acceptable. So my advice and recommendation, as I said in the report, is that it meets those tests. It's okay. In terms of overshadowing, which you assess based in springtime, 21st of March, you effectively follow the sun around the site and work out where the shadows cast and follow that shadow around. And again, we've done that assessment. And there is shadow, but that falls within the woodland or on parts, certainly small parts of the garden ground of the objector to the back. But again, it meets the test. So we're sitting here saying, Chair, there is not an impact in terms of sunlight, daylight, or indeed overshadowing. You're right about the amenity. There's a judgment to be had about whether you like the look of the fence or not. I mean, in this particular case, the applicants applied for it. They don't need to necessarily justify it to us. We're just assessing whether it's acceptable or not. It is an existing sports club. It's got previous permissions for different types of netting and screening and this is just almost a continuation of that. I appreciate in there maybe it's a feeling that because it's a darker colour, it's maybe more repressive, maybe. But again, we reach a different view on that, Chair, as the report sets out. So, Chair, to be honest, you know, we can reach other solutions or other compromises, but we've just judged what's before us and we find it to be acceptable. But if the committee reach a different decision, we'll talk to the tennis club about alternatives, Chair.
Anybody else want to come and cause a car today? I'll allow you to.
Councillor, I have to disagree. I don't think there has been a light assessment done on this. I think that this has been done by I. It's not been done by any scientific measure that another application I've been looking at has been done by. And also that this, we're talking about a 12-foot high fence. Now, a few months ago, we were up in Bilston looking at a fence that was 6 foot high, and it was called intimidating. We've got a 12-foot high fence here that's 8 feet away from the objector's property, and it's got a dark green net over it, which shades all the light out of their garden and out of their house. Now, if that's not intimidating, but a 6 foot fence in Bilston on a main road is, I don't know where we're getting our guidance from here. I think we need to look at how we judge these things.
Chair, the heights are as set out in the report, and as I referenced, there are two photographs set up there. I think the issue may be, Chair, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that there is a topography change between the two sites. So we're talking about the heights of fencing, hence the photographs up on the board. I think the difference of opinion is that when you go back to the objector's property, it's at a different level in terms of the ground compared to the tennis club. The topography changes, so the tennis club sits higher compared to objectors. So the heights are correct as stated in the report. The other thing, Chair, we have done a correct assessment in terms of the light, daylight and overshadowing, Chair. That's available online. I've got copies here if anyone wants to see it, Chair.
Sorry, is there anybody else wanting to, Councillor Smail?
I'd just like to move a motion that we accept the recommendations subject purely to using the semi-translucent light green material, because I think that will bring peace to the situation.
Johnson.
Thank you. Can I suggest that we have some mediation between the two parties and bring it to the next meeting?
You could, yes. I'm inclined to want to make a decision today on it, though, because, you know, I think there's been a lot of to and fro, Councillor Johnson, and I think we're at the stage now where I think it really should be coming to a conclusion for both parties, one way or the other. Councillor Smail, you've moved something. Is there a second, Councillor Smail? Councillor Russell?
Happy to formally second.
Is there an amendment to that? Byrne?
I've just got a question as opposed to an amendment, if that's okay. Am I right in asserting that the condition is that the colour of the fencing will come back to planning anyway?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Chair,
and also, just before he replies, well, Peter, 8.16 in the report says that there's been good neighbourliness, an agreement has been reached, although that's not formalised. Am I correct in reading that sort of an informal agreement between the objectors and the applicants, that's acceptable? And if so, what's prohibitive to formalising that as a condition?
Chair, I suppose the initial assessment is we've assessed the proposed netting and have reached a determination or judgment based on it being acceptable. So therefore it seems maybe unreasonable to require them to move it up and down if that's not necessary, if the netting's acceptable. The committee can decide if they wish to do so to put a condition that it's taken up and down at certain times of the year. There is reference to the tennis season. I'm presuming that's weather related. I'm not sure where it's got a fixed date to it, but we can put one on it if that's what the members wish to do so, Chair. But as for whether there's a formal agreement, I'm not sure, Chair, but there's been discussion.
It is in the report, it seems to be a... I'm not going to say harmony's broken out, but at least it seems to be there. Right, Councillor Smail has moved. Councillor Ross has seconded. Is there an amendment to that, and it's the subject to the colouring that you said, the light coloured green. Yeah. Okay, is that agreed? Councillor Hackett.
Sorry, Chair, just to comment that I'll agree with the motion. It's just to say to encourage the tennis club, if they wish to have a darker netting or whatever it is, I would arguably look at positively in the future if it could be removed when they're playing, because that would then, as I say, wouldn't have a detrimental impact on the neighbours.
Okay, that's noted. Right, are we agreed? Or Councillor Smail's motion.
Yes,
right.
Semi-translucent,
yes.
Pale green netting.
Yes, I got that message. Right, well, that's the meeting finished. Thank you very much for your attendance and forbearance. and, you know, have a nice journey home to get your tea.